I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman Show. They're from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by Mr. Luke Bug from the Geek of Steel podcast. What's up, Luke?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely, man. So tell us a little bit about how you fell into this whole Superman fandom thing. How did that start for you? Because the listeners can't see, but you have a very impressive spread of Superman memorabilia behind you, man. So I'm envious.
This is the bedroom or the office or the fortress of solitude. This is where I come to escape the world. I'm Luke Bug. Also go by the Geek of Steel. Superman fan, first of all, that became a blogger, became a podcast host and became a journalist. So it's all sort of my love of Superman and everything else came to be. And then, the podcast of Steel began a couple of years ago, but it all really, for me, it's why I wanted to come on the show, because I adore Smallville. Smallville is what got me into Superman in the first place, by chance. And when Smallville, the first season ended, I wanted to know more about these characters. Obviously, I knew it was about Superman. I knew the basis of the characters because everybody knows who Superman is. So when the season finished, I started reading comics. I started reading books. I started reading the Smallville companions to get information and all these wonderful storylines and characters. But yeah, it sort of happened by chance that I woke up one morning on a Sunday and put my TV on, and the pilot was showing on TV. And I was like, okay. And yeah, wow. And got hooked ever since after that. But obviously this was pre-powerful internet, so streaming wasn't available. So I had to wait for season one and then season two and so on and so on. So I started reading more and then became obsessed with Superman in general, as you can probably see behind me.
So you just randomly turned on the TV and found the pilot on. Is that correct?
So it was on a TV channel over here called Channel 4 and E4. That's where Smallville was aired. It didn't come out that often, but I didn't really know much about it because back then, I wasn't the Geek of Steel or anything. I was just Luke Bug looking for something to watch on TV. And yeah, I can remember I recognize that barn, this sort of scenario. Looks a lot like the Superman world. And then obviously Clark was in it and everything else. And I was like, okay, this show has my attention and I want more of it.
That's awesome. That's actually very similar to my Smallville origin story, because I am ashamed to say, and I find it very funny now that I do a Smallville podcast, but I had no idea the show was coming out. And I tuned into, I don't know if it was the first run or a repeat of Metamorphosis, which is the second episode. And like you, and I like tuned in like right at the beginning-ish. And I was like, that guy is bald. He looks like Lex Luthor. That guy looks like he could be Superman. What? They're saying Smallville. What is this show? So, it was the second episode for me. And it was about halfway through season one, and I started getting into it as well. So this was your gateway into the greater Superman fandom, or at least the fandom you are today?
Yeah, and that was it. It opened up sort of a whole new hobby and love for Superman that I didn't really know of before. I think it was the combination of finding a TV show that I enjoyed, because back then there wasn't much there that I was sort of wanting to watch. It was all shows like The OC and Dawson's Creek and lots of other stuff that I have no interest in. But this one, I was like, okay, this is obviously fantasy-based. There's some sci-fi. There's some geek culture. At the time, you know, it was kind of more trendy then to be a geek. I've never been wanting to be a geek because of its trendiness. I just sort of fell into that role and got lost in a wonderful storyline. And, you know, just that comfort of a television show. These faces and characters that you get to know and love over the years and sometimes hate. Mm.
Yeah, that's very true, very true. So, you know, obviously you stuck with it. You know, these years later, you're still a huge Smallville fan. You know, what's like your favorite era of the show? I enjoy asking people that because, there's like the high school years, the what we're in now, the college dropout years, as I've decided to call them, and then have your Metropolis years at the end, right? So what's your kind of favorite era of the show?
See, it's always, for me, I love the school stuff, the high school stuff, anything to do with Clark on the farm or in the barn or just hanging out in Smallville. I've always loved Americana, whether it be the cute mum and pop diner or the quiet roads. And that's when I fell in love with the show. But I love all seasons of it. There are some slow parts in the middle, as you know, there are always some of those sort of, they phoned it in episodes, but I loved it all. I can remember especially, it was hard for me to watch the finale because I knew I wasn't getting any more. So I didn't watch that as soon as I could because I had to sort of mentally prepare myself for that final episode. But it was just always a joy, each and every episode to watch, waiting for that theme tune to kick in, to wait for the action-packed high point of that episode or waiting for that emotional scene. That normally was accompanied by some very emotional music. I loved everything about the show. It's, I think, other than Scrubs, it's one of my favorite musical scores. Every single episode was done so well with the music.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny because I this episode has a song in it, but it almost like, why is that here? But we'll talk about it at the end.
Yes.
But but no, that's a huge draw for me as well as the music. Like I feel like especially the high school years, you know, maybe they had a bigger, well, they did have a bigger budget then for music. So not only did they have a lot more popular music at the time, but it was so spot on to what it was like. This is the synchronicity between the what you're hearing and what you're seeing. Like it was so well done and they were so smart about it. And even now, even this season, season six, they have some great heavy hitter music selections with there as well. So, no, you're absolutely right. The show works on so many levels. And there's a reason we all keep coming back to it, you know, after all these years. But we always hold on to it, right? But yeah, that's great, man. You know, you mentioned Americana. You're wearing your flannel today.
Always,
so good on you.
There's always a bit of flannel going on somewhere. I mean, that's going to just happen by incidents and coincidences that, okay, Clark wears a bit of plaid. I'll wear some of that as well. I made a bit of flannel as well. The lumberjack look, as they call it. But it was, yeah, I did get quite obsessed with the clothing on that show as well. One of my grail items that I'm still hunting for is an original or a custom-made Crow's jacket. I've got a Justice League jacket, but on my list is definitely the Smallville one. But I do have his football jersey, which is one of the favorite things in my wardrobe.
Ah, yes. Very good. Yes, I have a couple of friends that have, Craig Byrne, who wrote The Companion, and then as well as Matt Shrix. They have my friend from a lot of podcasts with him, and from Lois and Clark is his original podcast, but he has a leather jacket as well. In fact, I went out to California for my birthday a couple years ago, got to hang out with him.
Nice.
And me thinking like, you know what, I'm not going to, because I try to not be the guy who wears like the Superman shirt to the comic book store. Like I feel like, all right, I got to like tone it back a little bit when I'm in these situations. But they both show up and they're both wearing the Smallville High School jacket.
You got to do it.
I'm like, this is great. I'm like, I should have done it.
It's like wearing your sports uniform, you know. You got to support the home team sort of thing. Now, I've got the football jersey and they're not particularly, I mean, we do soccer over here, as you know, but American football's not so big and it's quite an odd item to wear out and about if you were just in UK, because people are like, why is your shirt like three sizes too big? I'm like, you know, this is a football jersey. You mean soccer? It's like, no, football. But yeah, I think I wore it for the first time feeling comfortable out in public at the Smallville Superman celebration, back in Metropolis back in 2018. And that was like, yeah, now I feel like it's like casual cosplay. It's got obviously Kent on the back. It's not it's not full beam nerdgasm of t-shirts, but it's just little
undercover cosplay.
That's it. Yeah, it's a bit of undercover cosplay.
That. So you've been over to the States. You've been to the Metropolis celebration.
Yes, twice. It was a fantastic time, sort of first time going 2018. It was a trip that I always wanted to do on my bucket list. And 2018 is when I really decided this was the year I will make an attempt at having more fun with the blog and the website and leave comfort zones. So I decided that was the year, the 40th celebration, to go to Metropolis and had a fantastic time. Went back the year after and sort of I evolved a little bit in that time as a blogger, and I got to host a panel with Erica Durance and Helen Slater, and I was like, this is the goal right now. That was a fantastic moment, surreal, but a fantastic moment in my career.
That is awesome, man. Yeah, and I believe that's online, right? People can watch that.
It is. Yes, on YouTube. I'll send you a link for that one. It was supposed to be about 50 minutes, and I had all my time and questions planned out to the T, so I had everything organized, and sort of halfway through, I got called to the side and said, you've got about 20 more minutes that you can fill up. And I was like, oh, okay, not a problem. Wow. And sort of, yeah, fantastic moment.
Could you find a way to keep talking to them? I'll figure it out. I'll find a way.
Yeah, I mean, there was sort of questions came out of it, and we did some more questions from the audience, which was fantastic to see so many massive Superman and Smallville fans, you know, sitting there speaking with Lois. It was like, and I did before the event, sort of, I had sort of a little bit of a meet and greet with them to sort of break the ice. And I said to Erica, I was like, look, I apologize in advance. I'm probably going to call you Lois quite a few times because that is who you are to me. But she was an absolute sweetheart, and the event couldn't have gone better. I had a great time.
I'm sure she's used to that by now.
Oh, yeah. So. I'm sure of it. Yeah.
That's great, man. Yeah, that's on my bucket list as well. I mean, I mean, if you can make it there, I really have no excuse not to.
You got it.
drive up to Illinois. You know, when the world reopens, I think we're all itching to get back to these kind of group events and communities. So yeah. I definitely, you know, me and some select few voices you might have heard on the podcast here, we'll probably make a pilgrimage there together, and it's going to
be
fun.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
So yeah. So, but great, man. Well, hey, there you go. That's your origin story.
Yes.
For where you came from and your Superman Smallville fandom. That's fantastic. But hey, you know, we're here to talk about a season 6 episode called Trespass, Luke.
Yes,
and I got to tell you, I had no memory of this episode. Like, as I rewatched it, I was like, oh, I remember this part or that part. But it's interesting because this is what I've said this a few times now, that this is my blind spot, if you will, for my encyclopedic knowledge of Smallville, because it's like an hourglass, right? It's like at the beginning, you rewatch everything, and everything is just, you know, oh God, I got to rewatch the episode 2 or 3 times, you know, because there's only 2 or 3 seasons and all that, and it's establishing everything. At the end, it's like, well, it's the end, it's really exciting superhero stuff going on now, and it's the most fresh in my mind, even though it's been a few years since they first aired. And then, of course, I rewatched these all when they came out on home video at least once, right?
Yeah.
But those middle seasons, it's like, who's dating who now, and what's, and who, when does so-and-so show up? And so there's some episodes that kind of fall through the cracks, and this is definitely one of them, but a lot of important stuff happens in it, right? So it's not to be overlooked.
As you said, it's one of those episodes that you don't forget. It's there in the back of your mind, but there are some fantastic scenes in there. And still, after all this time going back and watching it, there were still some exciting moments. But yeah, it's one of those episodes that kind of, when it comes to a lot of the very exciting episodes and the ones that are really based around an ongoing storyline, it's one that just kind of maybe has been pushed to the back of the bookshelf in a way.
Indeed. So in Smallville, the official companion, season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, as we both hold up our copies.
Yes.
Writer of this episode, Tracy L. Bullimo, had this to say, quote, "The paparazzi, obviously, are very prevalent in our society today. And in the world of our show, with Lex being a man of great power and international fame, he would attract this type of attention. Unfortunately for Lana, that is going to be something she has to deal with, and it will either bring them closer or be a source of conflict that could potentially tear them apart. Having a chance to mirror what's going on in our current society and the world for our characters is really cool." So that seems to have been the genesis of an idea for this episode. And you know, that's something they play with sometimes, where like Lex is like this international celebrity and he's got people following him around, reporters. There's so many characters over the years that have come and gone on the show. And you know, it makes sense, right? They did a whole thing with Linda Lake earlier, Tori Spelling, right? With her whole gossip column and them. But it's interesting that like that was the idea, but that's such a small part of the episode. It's like a red herring, the whole paparazzi
thing. It was,
thing.
Yeah, because obviously it's not even the person. Spoiler alert, if you've not seen it. You've had your chance. It was like bloody 15 years ago. But at the time when this aired, you know, websites were big for gossip columns, whether it be like TMZ.com or Perez Hilton. And they did use that element a bit towards it. But yeah, with that whole red herring where it not actually being, I think it was Espinosa, I think his name was.
Espinosa, like that, yeah.
That's it. And he did look like a shifty guy. So, oh yeah, that's
he did.
That's definitely the one. There was a sort of a journalist scene where there's everyone like throwing cameras in Lana's face. And there was one guy that really stood out. And I think, oh yeah, that's clearly Lekinna. He's got long hair. He looks rather greasy and he looks shifty. But it wasn't, yes, red herring. It was actually one of them, the security guards, who was just as creepy towards the end. His eyes almost glazed over when, you know, it went all kicked off on that rooftop. But yeah, it was directed very well. I mean, those camera shots, there was lots of POV at the beginning when there's a creepy guy spying into the room, out the window. So clearly at the beginning, if you know your murder mysteries, you should have guessed that it was somebody that knows all the ins and out of a home. And it was obviously one of the security guards that knows the blueprints to that Luther Mansion, which I still love that building. I think it's a wonderful looking building, that castle.
The Luther Mansion, the Queen Mansion, the X-Men Mansion. It's been well used.
Yes, that was it.
But let's get into it then. Trespass.
I watch over you every day. And you never even notice.
You took that picture of me in my bedroom. You're the one who's been calling. You killed Brady.
I wasn't supposed to. He figured out that it had to be someone on Lex's security team. I couldn't let him stop me from saving you.
Saving me? From who? That photographer you killed? Was he just a part of all of this?
He had a part to play. But your ex messed it up. I wanted to show you how far I was willing to go.
You wanted to shoot him in front of me, didn't you? But Clark stopped him before you could get there.
Lex is infecting you. You're starting to talk like him. Think like him. It makes me sick what he's doing to you. But I can stop it. I can give you your life back.
Trespass is the 14th episode of Smallville's sixth season. It aired on February 8th, 2007. It was written by Tracy A. Bellamo and directed by Michael Rohl. And the episode starts out, and we have a headline called Lexana. And it's funny because that is a term that the fandom came up with, and
it was.
Yet they're using it on the show. So
I think that was a nice little just nod to the fan base. It was huge back then. It wasn't too big over here, but obviously forums at the time were starting to get a more popular place. So names like, you know, Klarna and Lexana and everything else going on to it. It's a fun little mix on words.
This show is what taught me what shipper and shipping meant. I was like, what do you mean? I'm like, relationship. I'm like, oh.
Big part of the show. See, I knew that from the OC days, but yeah, another word that I found out through Smallville that I didn't know of before. I shouldn't have Googled it at all back in the day, but it was fanfic. And I was like, what's fanfic? And I was like, oh, that's fanfic. Yeah.
That is a slippery slope, my friend.
Yes, I did not need to go down that rabbit hole at all.
But apparently it was the set designer or the prop master or somebody, because in the companion, Bellamo says, I wish I could take credit for it. We always love it when we have an opportunity to wink to the fans to say we know their terminology and their culture about the show. And that was a great way to get it in there. So that's always fun when you have that symbiotic relationship between fan and show. So then we're six seasons in now, so we're very familiar with each other. You know, we'll take a screenshot of that because there's some good stuff in those little headlines you can see. But continuity, right? As you said, an ongoing storyline, right? This is what more of this is talking about. At the end of the last episode, Crimson, for those of you who haven't seen it or don't remember, and if you don't, you know, this is a retrospective podcast here, so you probably, I don't know, you probably are familiar, but Clark was on the Red Kryptonite. He's going to kill Lex.
Yes.
Martha shows up with Green Kryptonite just in time to stop him. Simultaneously, when Lex grabbed a chisel, as Clark refers to it later, that's my dad's chisel. He would identify it that way. Oh, yeah, dad always loved that chisel. But Lex stabbed him with it. And so to Lex and Lana, they were like, oh, that's what stopped Clark. But then Lana looks down and sees this bent chisel and the big, like, as I see, you have your CW endings and you have your X-Files endings for Smallville. And in the X-Files ending with the last episode, God was her pulling out that chisel and we saw that she had it. So she's pulling it out and looking at it. This is such a Lex and Lana thing to do. Like, I have this mysterious thing. Let's pull it out and look at it, right? But hey, she's not alone, right?
Because
we
not.
Get this, like, this POV shot of, like, this voyeur. And then takes a picture of her and sends it to her on her Sprint cell phone, by the way.
That was so tech. We got a plus. That was big tech. Sponsored podcast, is this, yeah?
Yeah, we got a plus one for product placement, Pete, here, because this, how many times you see the Sprint cell phone? Lex has one, Lana has one, like the Luthers are on the Sprint cell phone plan. I use Sprint myself, so, you know, there you go. But anyway, she freaks out, you know, and it is creepy. I mean, if you were in your house and someone sent you a picture of yourself, you would freak out too.
I've had it happen once to me. I was at a Comic-Con and just walking around, as you do, back when Comic-Cons were a thing, just walking around, I got a text message saying, are you at London Film and Comic-Con? And I was like, yes. And then I got a picture of the back of my head. And I was like, who's that? Luckily, it was a buddy behind me, not a stalker, like in the show.
Right.
But yeah.
I love that. It's like, you get a text, turn around, and you're not turning around. Don't turn around. So you get that text about that. But, you know, she freaks out. She runs in the hallway. She finds Lex. The security team comes in. You know, there's nobody there, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there's drama because she left her drawer open and the chisel is there, you know? And she's like, Lex, could you go close the window? And he's like, sure. And she kind of slyly hides the thing. So
yeah,
she's becoming more like Lex here.
She is, just not as sneaky as Lex, because she put it in the top drawer, surrounded, like, in wrapped up in a very, very bright red piece of fabric. So, oh, yeah, if I saw that in a drawer, my first thought would be, oh, let's have a look at that. What's wrapped
what is
up
that?
In
what's
there?
In that silk handkerchief? It's the same. Like, Lana has a type for handkerchiefs, the same kind of thing she used to wrap the Stones of Power in when she had them back in season 4. It's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
Because there's always so many shots in season 4 of unwrapping this, like, stone. I was like, here she is. She loves her red velvet, red silk handkerchief.
That's the witch in her, I think. That's a little bit of, like, Wiccan witch going on.
And I'm thinking to myself, why doesn't she tell Lex what happened? And then the episode answers that quickly. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm very, very impressed, very impressed, right? But we, you know, we go to opening credits, we come back, find out Lex is on a business trip, you know? And the reason Lex is on a business trip this episode is because Michael Rosenbaum is directing the next episode, Freak. So whenever there's an episode that an actor who's a regular is directing next, they usually kind of give them a lighter week, you know? Same thing happened with, when John Schneider directed Talisman, he wasn't in Memoria. When Tom Welling directed Hydro, he wasn't in production order now. He wasn't in Static that much. Because Subterranean was wedged in there in between. That was not the original production order. So that's interesting. But it is odd that he goes out of town and they even mention that. But I like how, as we find out through this conversation between Lana and Chloe, Lana didn't tell Lex about, she's like, I made him think it was the paparazzi. She mentioned the paparazzi, you know, those paparazzi are, right? Because she didn't want to show Lex the picture because it had the chisel that was messed up. Clearly it's all bent. So I was like, okay, this is actually pretty clever, I thought.
Yeah, there were quite lots of, well, many twists and turns throughout the whole thing, but it was just, you know, that, again, Lana is getting more like Lex with the suspicion and keeping things secret and hiding things, and who knows the most in their relationship, who's got the stronger deck of cards sort of thing. I think towards, you know, season 1 and season 2, she was a very sweet and innocent young lady. It didn't take long for her to not only be suspicious, but also be just as snoopy as Lex sneaking around Clark's barn and trying to find out more secrets about him.
We see lots of snoopiness from Lana in this episode.
Oh, so much.
They decide, okay, hey, you're going to hide out here, right? Lana's going to hide out with Chloe in there. And Chloe, of course, drops a couple of Lex's RoboCops outside, calls the guy Norman Bates. We have very Chloe dialogue going on here, right? But there's more drama here because it's like, and the drama has been building between Lana and Chloe this season because it's like, look, I know Clark has a secret. I know you know what it is. I guess you're not going to tell me, and that's fine. But yeah, let's work through this problem this episode. And, you know, it is an interesting dynamic, at least, you know, that it's not, because that's something that rewatching these episodes, I'm like, okay, the episodes, maybe Clark is, but all the other characters, it's not as stagnant as I might have thought for these middle seasons. So, So then we go to the Kent farm, and you know, it's one of these episodes where there's animals on the farm. Clark has his horse, and I'm like, ah,
yes, wow, they do what? Have animals. It's fantastic. This is actually a working farm.
Right. I mean, we see some cows sometime, but it's like, and then of course, Shelby's around every now and then.
But yeah, it's normally the same cows, though. It's that same stock footage of a fantastic looking barn and the exact same cows coming back for feeding time. But yeah, I always loved the scenes if it was on the farm, though. And I think that's when Clark is slamming the fence posts into the ground. Anything like
that. Stuff.
I mean, it's simple effects back then, but watching it on TV, it's no CGI as such. Obviously, there's a little bit of video editing going on, but it's still, when it did stunts well, when you get to see some superpowers, it was always fun to watch that on the screen.
In the mundane ways, you know, which is interesting because, you know, he's guidance horsing and Martha comes back and she's like, how was it that I went to Metropolis and came back and went to this charity event, which is very important why she drops this name. So check off charity event here that they mentioned. That would be 6 hours, you know, and then because the round trip is 3. And then if you add in how long she was there. So we're talking about she was gone for like 9 hours probably, which is crazy. She's like, how is it that you're still doing these chores? Because you started when I left and you're finishing when I got back. And it usually takes you like 2 minutes. And, you know, to your quote of your point about using the powers, right? He's not using his powers intentionally because the paparazzi, which they are really, and I get it because the writer was like, this is what we tried to tackle. Like, they're really pushing this paparazzi angle so strong and it doesn't pay off at all.
Just the biggest red herring going throughout the whole thing. But yeah, I like that scene, not just because the fact that she's concerned that why it's taken him so long, but the fact that, you know, there's a little part of her that likes the fact that the work around the farm gets done very quickly because she can use her son to do all the heavy lifting and it gets done in an instant. So yeah, I think that's the sort of the strict mum coming out of her saying, why haven't you finished your chores yet? Why are you still living here rent-free?
That's right. But you know, but it's a nice touch because, well, Chloe comes in, you know, and it's a nice touch between, again, there's little things that show you he's superpowered because they're both cold and they're on these coats and they're shivering. And you know, they make a snow is very established outside a lot, right? So it's like very cold outside. And Clark just wearing the same thing he'd wear in like, you know, June or July, right? Just a flannel shirt folded up. And he's not even bothered by it. And so, again, to your point, those little subtle things are like, they're like, oh, yeah, this is Superman. This is cool. This guy's different. I like that. Chloe's there to, you know, tell him that, hey, you know, Lana's got a stalker. And he's like, oh, wait, what are we going to do about it? You know, and she's like, no, it's fine. She's with me. Don't worry about it. It's something you can do. What you can do, though, is go talk to Jimmy. Because Clark had said, like, oh, I'm surprised you're not snuggling up to Jimmy right now.
That's it, yeah.
And again, continuity points, they broke up at the end of the last episode, Jimmy and Chloe, because Jimmy... The guy has self-respect. I got to give it to him. He's like, you know what? This girl loves Clark, not me. I'm not going to be part of this. You guys be together. And I, you know, at the time, 2007, Zach, I would have loved that because I'm, you know, talking about ships. That was my ship back in the day, Clark and Chloe. But Chloe has to tell him, well, Jimmy and I kind of broke up. So could you call him and, you know, she shows Clark the picture, and the super's like, "That's my dad's chisel," which I don't know why that line stuck out to me, Luke, but I just found it funny.
It's a Kent. Clearly, it's an antique from the Kent family. One of those very special chisels that he knew straight away. Hang on a minute, that's dad's. But
right. Oh, but they're concerned that Lana's going to find out a secret because she's dialogue only Chloe can say, you know, like, she's been orbiting your secret for years, but she's finally coming in for a landing.
Oh, yeah, so, like, yeah. But what I loved about that was that the fact that she managed to print off a photograph of that mobile phone, the cell phone, and it was wonderful HD clarity. That's probably why he could tell it was his dad's chisel, because it was such a clear and crisp photograph taken from a phone that had 10 pixels.
If that was a Sprint flip phone from 2007, you'd be like, what does she have? can't even tell, right? So it's the enhance trick. But yeah, so speaking of sneaky Lana, we cut back to Lana, and what is she doing? She's going through Chloe's stuff.
Yep, she can't help it.
Going through her laptop. And so, you know, I love it when we can take screenshots of, like, the monitors and all that. So she's going through her laptop, and she finds this folder.
What's it called? CK. Why would Chloe name it that? She knows who he is.
Yeah. So come on, Chloe. But to her credit, she now has a password
yes.
on this folder. Now, she must have learned from back in season two when she let Lana use her computer at the torch. And Lana, again, as Lana does, is going through Chloe's computer,
yep.
right? And it's the, and I was half expecting to see these pictures again, Luke, but it was the pictures of them at the spring formal in the CK folder. I'm like, is that what she's going to find? Like, that would have been an interesting... subverting your expectations, to borrow yeah. a phrase, right? Like, oh, you think it's going to be something and it's really just that again?
Yeah.
And I think that would have been a cool continuity callback considering that's exactly what Lana found years ago when she was going through her computer. But good on Chloe for finally putting a password on this thing, right?
She learned. Learned from previous mistakes.
Yeah. So we got to shut that laptop because she doesn't shut it to like hide it from someone, but she shuts it in frustration because she didn't get the answer she was looking for. But hey, somebody's outside the door, Luke.
I know. The sinister music
began.
See those
feet under there? Yeah.
That music came back and, yeah, good use of sort of obviously original orchestral stuff. But yeah, the spooky music came back.
And I got to say, I feel like this is kind of drawn out because she gets a knife. I get Halloween vibes a couple times this episode. This is one of them, one for the music. Here and then, especially Halloween 2 at the end, when she's in an abandoned hospital, but we'll get there.
Yes.
but she goes out to the you know, she lives above the Talon, and she goes out there and she's got her knife, right? And she's slowly walking around, looking around. So I don't know. I felt like they kind of drew this out some. Luke, what do you think?
It was lots of stairs in this episode, whether it be going up or down, and it was so much going on. But yeah, they were building that suspense with each and every step, though. And it was just, you know, the Talon is a big place. It's got a lot of lighting, but she decided not to put on any lights at all to inspect what was going on downstairs. But yeah, she came down and there was a lovely big present for her on top of a chair. And yeah, it was some more lingerie. She'd already been wearing some at the beginning, purple, that I liked because it was one of Lex's colors. And all, you know,
right.
but yeah, she, and there was a note inside, wasn't there? I think something like, I want you to wear this.
I want you to wear this on one side. And you're like, oh,
okay, that's nice.
And then she flips it over, when I kill you.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. Like, we've gone to a whole nother level of stalking here.
It went there quick. But what I like about the fact is, it was on, obviously, the reverse side of the card. It would have worked both ways if she read the wrong side first, you know?
When I kill you, I want you to wear this. Genius.
Yeah. So it's you know, you never know. It could be a bumpy trip over there with that packaging, and that card could have easily flipped over.
I will remember that next time I do this myself, Luke. Thank you for pointing that out.
Right.
You want both sides of the card. And no matter what side they pick it up from, you want it to make sense.
It still gives you a sort of jump scare when you see the other side of it. But yeah, that's when she freaked out and, you know, it all kicked off and she went running around there with that knife.
Yeah, she's running around with a knife looking crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would if you found... I would find that. I would... I don't know. I would react similarly if I found someone says, "Wear this when I kill you." So she runs outside, and apparently there's the whole every paparazzi in town is outside. You know, the door
waiting.
Of the Talon.
They were all there waiting for that instant moment when she would come out of a fire escape because that. Mm-hmm. And it was about at least a dozen people there taking pictures and flashes going off. But yeah,
it's like the Broadway crowd. Right? They've learned like, okay, don't go to the front door; you go to the side door. So they're all waiting.
Stage entrance.
And she looks like. Crazed, and you know, of course, that gets filmed, which Lex watches on his cell phone, which is inaccurate for 2007, but we'll get there. She gets rescued by Brady, which is one of Lex's security guards.
Yes,
because I had some memory of the episode. I was like, oh, so is this the one? But it's not. Good on you, show. You gave us two security guards.
That was it. Yes, just two. One for the front door, one for the back.
Yes, and. It reminds me of way back in season one, Obscura, right, where she was getting visions and all that, and there were two deputies, and you're like, is it this guy? No, it's the chief from Battlestar Galactica. He, you know, he was the red herring in that case, and it was the other guy. And it wasn't like the same plot or anything, but I'm just like, Lana, two security guards, one of them's bad, one of them's good. They try to make you think it's the other one. So at least they gave you... an option of like maybe it's one of these two guys because I never bought it was paparazzi, right? I always thought it was gonna be, as you said, gotta be an inside job. Who else is gonna have access to Luther Mansion
exactly.
like that? So
yeah.
But Mac is the other one who, spoilers, is the stalker.
Yeah.
Why would he write this note? Was he just trying to really? I guess the idea was he's trying to really scare her so when he saves her life, she like falls in love with him, right?
Exactly.
That's the plan.
It was all gonna be, you know. a bit odd, but yeah, he wanted her gone from Lex's evil grasp, and he thought he could give her a more safer life. And so, yeah, I think it wasn't the fact that he wanted to kill her. He tried to at the end. Again, more spoilers. Hmm. But yeah, he wanted to make her believe that life with Lex wasn't safe. So he wanted to take her away to his, you know, one room apartment in Metropolis somewhere and give her a better life. Yeah. Okay, buddy.
Good plan.
Yeah.
And we say that now because we can kind of talk about how everything else goes down with the knowledge of, oh, it was Mac the whole time. Mac, yeah. By the way, played by Jordan Belfi, who... people who watch Hallmark Christmas movies might recognize from Snow Brides, co-starring with Katrina Law from Arrow, Nissa Al Ghul. Our friends over at Always on the Arrow just covered this movie over the Christmas season.
Everything comes back. Yeah. And that's why we always hold on to Smallville, because everything comes back to it. You know, without this show, nothing else would be there.
It is the hub of all entertainment, let me tell you.
It is.
So we get, you know, we get the, I believe this is our first, like, Jimmy and Clark scene, just the two of them, because Chloe has sent Clark to go talk to Jimmy because, and, you know, as a photographer myself, I was like, you know what, just because I'm a photographer, I don't associate with paparazzi people, but it's like, it's funny, like, Jimmy Olsen, he's a photographer, he must know these paparazzi people, and that's the logic of why Chloe sent Clark to talk to him, right?
Like, Jimmy, do you know anybody else that owns a camera?
Yeah,
give me a list.
So I give you a full list within the hour of anyone in town that has a camera.
Yeah, it was a typical shifty little room, red lights on, lots of cells everywhere, and cameras clicking.
Yeah, it's like what is this place, right? But you know, I guess firstly the important thing is they kind of bury the hatchet between Clark and Jimmy, because Jimmy had always been threatened by Clark, as you would be,
of course,
right? Like, look at this guy. So I don't care how big you are, I will take you down. That's a promise. You know, it's funny to see him like grandize himself about grandstand about
he Chloe was brave about. I mean, yeah, they didn't have many scenes together, but that one towards the end where he does say that, saying, "Look, if you hurt her, no matter how big you are, I'm gonna come for you." And I think Clark says something like, "You'll be in traction, but I commend your bravery."
Yeah, he's like, even if Chloe thinks you can walk on air, huh? Yeah, Superman reference.
Another
there.
One, yeah.
But he's like, yeah, I feel the same way, but just as friends. So maybe you're going to reconsider what you did in the last episode. So there you go. You know, Jimmy Olsen is going to be in Clark's life the rest of their lives, Luke. So it's good that they're on the same page. Like, this character we see here, he has a good long life ahead of him in the future of Superman. So Jimmy's like, is that why you're here? And he's like, yeah, but also, you're a photographer, right? You know some paparazzi people, so help me out. And so Jimmy's like, anything for a friend of Chloe. So there we go. We have a friend. Everything's good now. They've patched things up, and they're off their own little side adventure, which is, that's important because this is the first thing they've done together. Because even Clark shows up, he's like, hey, Chloe's not here. It's like, oh, I'm actually here to see you. Like, are we friends now?
Yeah. Are we cool again now that you've accused me of, you know, being with your beloved?
Right. So then we get, Michael Rosenlund is off, you know, we're preparing to direct the next episode. So he's out of town. He's in the first scene and he's in the last scene and to book in the show. And then, well, actually, he's in a couple scenes at the end, but still, he bookends the show. And then we got this one scene of him, you know, they filmed in the back of a car.
Yeah, bumping along.
One day.
looking at that phone car, again. Right? Yeah. Make a phone call.
Luke, we were around in 2007. We had cell phones. Maybe. Did you have, I had one, I think. Yeah. Let me think about it. Yes, of course I did. I was in college. Just trying to think. High school, where am I here in Smallville? There's no way he's going to stream the news on his flip phone. I don't care if he's Lex Luthor, right?
It was very clear. I mean, yeah, no, he may have had some futuristic tech. He may have got something from Brainiac. But at the time, the most high-tech function on my phone was the fact that I could play Snake. That is the only thing my phone could do back then. But yeah, it was a good scene for storytelling. Obviously, it was difficult because you said he wasn't there. They just went to sort of the back end of a fake limo that was probably cut in half just to film that scene. But it was, you know, she's not safe. Take her back. I want my beloved to be safe somewhere. But yeah, not much.
He drops a very Darth Vader line. He's like, I don't share your optimistic appraisal of the situation kind of line for Return of the Jedi on him. You know, he's like, oh, she's safe, sir. And he's like, so, yeah, ultimately, Lex, he's like, I turn on the news, and why is my fiance being accosted by these people? So they decide that they're going to move her to, like, a secure Luther Corp area. So that's the thing, right? Lex being out of town is crucial to this plan. So I can only assume that Mac here knows Lex's schedule. Oh, and he's like, all right, completely. He's going
to
be gone.
He's going to be gone from this time to this time. You know,
right,
very...
so I got to act now. So you could say, I you know, maybe I'm giving the episode too much credit, but I feel like, okay, why hasn't this guy done it before? Why is he doing it now? Okay, the guy knows Lex's schedule. He's out of town. That's the perfect time to strike. Mm. So, I mean, to me, it tracks, especially knowing who did it anyway. So.
Yeah, it's methodical in its madness where it all links together. Like, so, oh, why isn't Lex staying with her? Now he knows she's in trouble. It's like, oh, he's out of town because he's got to fix everything that's been going on. But also be away from, you know, that particular crime scene. Did Mac plan that weekend? Did Mac in advance have his big cork board with red string attaching it all to the different timepieces?
In front of his altar of Lana. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Candles, everything going on there.
Yeah, and you think to yourself, why would a paparazzi write that note? I'm like, all makes sense because it's all part of Mac's plan. Good old Mac, right? Yeah. So speaking of Mac, he comes in and they want Lana. Him and Brady, the other one, because he's not dead yet. They want Lana to go to... Actually, I don't even think Mac... Yeah, he's in here. It's weird because it takes a while to even introduce Mac, you know?
Yeah,
and I'll get to that at the end.
A forgettable face, in a way. He just sort of... He's there in the background, which is another... Maybe that was done on purpose, so you don't suspect him as being the one, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes they're like, oh, well, that's clearly the guy.
Yeah.
the shady guy. I've never seen. But it doesn't help. And, you know, I'll just say it now. I was going to say it for the end. You know, the term we use on this show is a Trevor, and that's just like a generic character that comes out of nowhere. They're like, who is this guy? Especially in the early years where it's like, oh, we've gone to school with so-and-so for years. I'm like, no, you haven't. I've been watching this show for 4 years. Who are you, right? so we settled into using the name Trevor, and this guy is the ultimate Trevor.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt like, because I feel like this character would have worked a lot better had he been around just... Again, as you said, in the background for a few episodes, is it that hard?
It's just, when you often see Lex, whether it be at a business meeting or yet another formal ball, he's got security around him. So they could have had him been a recurring character, and that would have given it a bit more oomph when you had that reveal at the end, like saying, oh my God, it was Mac all along. It would have helped, but it was still, yeah, as you said, a Trevor. there he is. Yeah. But it was good that it wasn't yet another meteor freak. At the beginning, you felt
that was good.
The person, they're clearly invisible because they're going around the house. We can't see them. Is it another person blending into an animal? Is it a duplicate? Is it another clone? It could have been a number of things, but just the fact that it was a villain that you could associate with, because there are people like that in the world. There are these stalkers, these people that go about, and combine that with that paparazzi element, it was the suspense of not knowing who your invisible enemy is. Because obviously Lana had no idea who was after her. It could have been anyone. Everybody is a suspect, much like in this episode.
Indeed. They had a recurring guy already, actor named Mike DuPont, and he goes on to be an Arrow. Speaking of everything being connected, hashtag it's all connected. He is one of the flashback guys in season 5, Victor, who is also in a Hallmark Christmas movie, Christmas duet. But anyway, that's beside the point. Always on the Arrow guys covered all these Christmas movies over the Christmas season. But I'm like, that guy had been in like 2 or 3 episodes, just used him, right? Just, I don't know. But it's episodic TV. I get it. But you just think if you know 2 or 3 episodes in advance, you're gonna have this background guy, just put him in there. That goes a long way, I think. So anyway, that's something that would have, I think, you know, it works well enough, but it would have definitely elevated if you're like, oh, it's that guy, and you would trust him more because you'd see him around. It's like, you're always suspicious of the new people. It's like Star Trek 6, spoilers for that, 30-year-old movie. There's a new character and she ends up being, you know, on the bad guy's side, but you know, you're like, well, yeah, of course it's her. She's new. I've never seen her before, and that's the same logic.
That's not really foreshadowing. That's just common sense that this new face that is getting more lines than anybody else in the show is going to be doing something later on that we need to go back and remember.
Absolutely. Lana turns down their, like, demands that she go to a Luther Corp secure facility. Yeah. And she's like, Lex is out of town. You work for me now. I'm like, well, I can just call him right now and work this out. But anyway... She's like, I'm going to go to the place people would never expect I would go. The Kents.
Yeah.
And she has some ulterior motives here, doesn't she, Luke?
Oh, she's back to her snooping ways. I'm pretty sure that the Kent house has more than 2 bedrooms. I'm sure, you know, they're both very good housekeepers. But she decides to go and stay in Clark's room, of all places for her to stay. And yeah, he can't help it. As soon as the door closes, she's back to snooping again, going
back
through his drawers. Yep.
She has a nice brief moment with Martha, and then it's off to the snooping. You know,
oh, yeah,
and,
of course.
You know, to your point, I really think the Kent farm only has two bedrooms, because when Lois stayed with them, Clark had to sleep on the couch, like, presumably for months.
Yes, so for a long, like, old time. You know, he's a growing boy.
House,
he needs his
room. That's a two-story house. Yeah. I've never heard of a two-story house only having two bedrooms, Luke.
It's
America. We have space here.
You have lots of space, and that's the thing. It is a beautiful home, and one that's being reused in Superman and Lois, I believe. But
yes.
I digress. There is room in that house for another spare bedroom, at least. I'm sure back in the day when Martha could have said, John, we need a guest bedroom. We don't just kick Clark out and let all the guests sleep
every
in there.
Every time we have guests.
Clark, sorry, son, you're back in the barn, or you're back on the sofa with Shelby.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was she was snooping around. She was going through his drawers.
There were some interesting pictures, actually. We have a picture of him and his parents. We got a picture of Chloe, like, from the yearbook, which is like, oh, Chloe got her own picture. Good sign for the Chloe and Clark shippers. And then there's a picture, blanking, you miss it, right? Picture of Clark, Chloe, and Pete. So I'm like, oh, look at that. When the set dressers and the prop masters can have a little bit of comedy like that, I love it. But you're right. But that's not good enough, right? She's frustrated. She can't find anything in drawers. So she starts going through all the drawers. Again, people, secure your stuff, because people are going to go through it, you know? And then so Clark has a cigar box, Luke.
Yep. You know, all Clark, all young teenage boys, I can remember my first ever cigar box. It was a special, it was handed down from my father, and his father handed it down to him. But yeah, but never, if you are ever in the opportunity to be in a teenager's bedroom, don't go through those drawers, because you will never know what you're going to find.
No.
But she knew that. She knew the risk she was taking. She did see a picture of herself, but yes.
She a picture of herself in a frame in a drawer.
Turned upside down, just for double negativity. I don't want to see your face. I'm going to turn it down and put it inside a drawer. That's how little you mean to me now.
We've all been there, though. It's like, well, we should throw this away because this person's out of my life. But, you know, I don't know. I got to just keep it for at least a while. So.
Back to the Smallville torch. He is still holding one for her.
Indeed. But in the cigar box, right, she's rooting around in there, and she finds the kryptonite necklace.
Yes.
I'm like, what? Again, the prop masters, right? What a continuity pull. And that was probably in the script, obviously. But I don't know, right? There's no dialogue about it.
No.
Because you could have just, like, in the script, it could have said, Lana is ruffling through Clark's things, finds nothing, and then a disturbance is heard. But they take this moment, and this has been a big unanswered question, you know, for, like, well, this necklace, right? He got it from her, and then, let's see, tracing the necklace back, how did it get into Clark's possession? Tina Greer... came back and impersonated Whitney, got Lana's necklace. I guess that's what Lana thinks, right? Thinking about what she thinks, right? She gave it to quote-unquote Whitney, who came back because they broke up in season two.
Yeah.
And he was like, can I have that just to remember you by? And she's like, sure. Of course, that's the meteorite that killed her parents.
Yeah.
She wore that every day for years. There's no way she's going to get that away.
Let's not get into that, because that's dark.
What? How morbid is that?
Right? Yeah, so, you know, okay. If your parents are hit by a car, what, you go around with a wheel? Or what? It's like, but yeah.
This is the lighter from the car, and I wear it around my neck. Yeah. But so in Lana's mind, she gave it to Tina, and who knows what happened to it, right? But then, you know, Visage is the episode of season two. She knows Clark's weakness. She puts that around his neck, throws him down in the storm cellar. The spaceship comes on and saves him. And that's a cool thing about the spaceship, is it's programmed to neutralize kryptonite, which is really smart.
Yes.
Because if I'm Jor-El programming this, I'm like, well... Of course, I don't think the Kryptonian should have known about kryptonite, but that's his own conversation because they hadn't blown up yet. But anyway, it neutralizes kryptonite. Makes sense. I don't want baby Clark to get out of a ship and die because of kryptonite. So it neutralizes all the kryptonite. So it made it clear. And that was such a cool moment because you didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, talk about Deus Ex Machina.
That
the ship saving him, right?
Fantastic. Not to it. I've got sort of a replica necklace that came with Lana's figurine, but I've always wanted a clear piece. Of that.
I'm sure they're out there. Like, there's so many Smallville props. Yeah. I'm slow to collect the Smallville props. I usually wait till someone gives me a gift.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten very expensive over the years. Even the little discs. I had one of those once.
Yeah, tagging on disc, yeah.
They go for silly money now.
Did you lose the disc as well?
Like, oh, no,
like Lex and Lionel, you also lost the disc.
Please, my collectibles are very safe.
There you go. No, way safer than a Luther's.
That's it. Well, I've got no cigar boxes for one.
Exactly, right? But, you know, she has this look of shock, and I can only imagine she's like, why does he have this, and why is it clear now? Because it's clearly the thing. And to your point, I would love to get one of those and just hang it from, like, my rearview mirror in my car. Like, that's a cool, like, it's again, undercover cosplay. You're like, what is that? People won't know. They're like...
Geek in disguise stuff. That's what it is.
But that's such a cool thing, and I don't... This might be the last time we see it, Luke. I'll have to keep an eye out for it, but this might be the last time we see it, but I appreciate we at least know where it is now.
Yeah.
But... She gets a call, and the call's coming from inside the house.
There's quite a few homages, as you say, to horror films and sort of people stalking each other. There's one particularly at the end when, you know, he smashes the door down with a very handy axe that
Here's
he finds.
Johnny.
Exactly. And they even, the only place that she can escape to is out of the window into the snow.
So shining.
Did it full on. There was no labyrinth.
Stuff off.
Do it well.
Rip off the best, right?
Yeah, and there were no hedges in this one to go and hide in, just a rooftop. But yeah, I was like, oh, I recognize this. Very clever stuff.
There's a phone call like, you can't ever escape from me, not even Clark Kent's bedroom. And
yes.
Calls a princess on the phone a couple, you know, so that's like kind of, that's a key word we'll find later. But then she, you know, she looks out on the door and there's a pool of blood.
First thing you do, what do? You touch it.
I was shocked she didn't even taste it, Luke, because it's like, it's you might as well at that point. It's blood.
I know who that is. That's very sweet.
So then, exactly, right? So then it's Brady. So I'm like, well, I guess he's not the guy. I guess it's the other one, right? Yeah. That's confirmed now. And he's bleeding out on the floor there. And it's, they show that he hadn't pulled his gun yet. So that shows that he felt safe when that happened. So I think that's a nice clue. But then he freaks out because he's dying. He grabs Lana's leg and then she falls down the stairs. And I'm like, In TV language, Luke, this is how people die.
That was, going back to it, I mean, yeah, I watched it, I say, like a few hours ago. That scene still makes me jump when he gives his, like, his death rattle groan and grabs her. But it was full on. But that fall down the stairs, I'm not sure who the stunt person was on that particular day. But it's not cut to look as if they're going down a big, long flight of stairs. It's one static shot. And she goes down, whoever's playing Lana, whacks her head on pretty much every single step. And then is left at the bottom of the stairs in a huge pile of mess.
Yes, yes. Well, Luke, you have a very honored place here on the podcast because you get to see the 100th hospital visit on this show, my friend.
I was thinking, I mean, they got their money back from that set. It was a beautiful set. Yeah, we got to see some of those wonderful tiles again on the floor, that same window, that same room that everyone goes in. It was, obviously, you know, when you do get a hospital scene in a TV show that has been ongoing for a long time, you know where you are straight away. It could be normally one of four places in Smallville. So either the barn, it's going to be, you know, back to the torch. It's going to be the coffee shop or the hospital.
Yeah, and this is the first category that has reached three digits. Wow. And you're like, I thought you were only in 98. Well, you know, apparently I should have counted Clark in the asylum and Labyrinth because I counted Lex in the asylum and asylum. So we've adjusted the tally board. We're at 99 now, and this is the 100th.
Wow.
So drop your balloons and bring in your big check and all that. 100
times to that wonderful place.
And I don't know. I think eventually we might catch up to the episode count. You know, we're in the mid-120s now. We'll see where it is at the end of the day. But you know what? That's the reason to go to the hospital. Falling down the stairs like that.
That was a serious one. It was a hefty fall. And the fact that, you know, she was pregnant as well was very scary.
Right.
Very scary.
So we get Lex's shady doctor, Dr. Langston, who's like, oh, the baby's fine. I'm just checking your blood pressure and all that stuff, right? So Mac is there as well, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, we need to get her to a safer location. And the doctor's like, we have the abandoned wing of a hospital. How safe, Luke?
I did like that part. I mean, there was plenty more hospitals to go to. She could have got choppered quite easily to Metropolis. But he was like, no, hang on. We've got an isolated, very dusty-looking storage facility that looks like something out of Scooby-Doo. Should be very safe there. But yeah, I was like, no.
In a small town, they have an abandoned wing of a hospital? That's so unrealistic. So, again, setting up the Halloween 2 ending.
That was it. Another horror moment.
We have a new category here on the tally board called injection count. All right. So this is an injection count plus one. Our statistician, Corey Moore, actually sent me a very extensive list of every single injection so far on the show. Shout out to Corey because doing the Lord's work, give me that stats because I certainly wasn't going to go back and count. But then we have this B plot with Clark and Jimmy, which is basically just to give them something to do. You know, they're like going, as you said, they're going through this, you know, very stock, like, what was red lights? They must be developing pictures here. And they talk about the paparazzi and, oh, yeah, don't feel bad. He makes a lot of money and this and that. Anyway, they find some, you know, they go through his CDs, right?
Well, yeah.
And pop in some.
No floppy disks this time. They've evolved into the new season with CD
2007
drives.
2007 technology, man. So they find this, and he has been trailing Lana. And like, oh, it must be Esposito. I knew it. Like, they're all just like, he must be the guy, right? And there are pictures of Lana around town. And then there's a picture of Lana at Clark's loft. And I thought to myself, what is this? And apparently she had been just snooping around everywhere, Luke, to try and find out what's up with Clark.
She is a snoopy little nosy girl. She's got as much journalistic integrity as, you know, Lois in some senses. She knows where to look. She's good at getting into places where she shouldn't be. But yeah, she was snooping around that barn again, looking for more clues or maybe more chisels.
Indeed. And luckily they keep the octagonalness in that locked toolbox or shooting. Like, what is this? So anyway, this is why Clark needs a real fortress of solitude. Well, actually, he has one. So I take it back. Yeah. Take all that Kryptonian stuff and put the necklace in the fortress, right? Don't leave it in your barn or in your room. Public place. There's no doors on the barn. Anyone can walk. Anyway.
It's always open. Always open. That's probably why they've got no animals, because they keep escaping.
Exactly. So Clark gets a phone call from his mom that Lana's in the hospital, you know. So then he super speeds away and leaves Jimmy right there. I'm like, that's not suspicious at all. I like that Jimmy was mad about it at the end of the episode, but he should have been a little more mad because they broke and entered somewhere and then he just left him there.
It was done for, like, dude, you were my ride. You left me there. You left me there to deal with the feds. What's going on?
that's not cool, man. So here we go full Halloween 2. And if you're not familiar, like, what does he keep saying that for? They should have Rick Rosenthal direct this episode because he directed Halloween 2 and he's directed episodes of Smallville. So that would be like perfect. But anyway, Lana wakes up and she's in this empty hospital, right? Just much as Laurie Strode was at the end of Halloween, the original Halloween 2. There's been three. Well, there's coming. There's been two, and there's about to be a third Halloween 2. But anyway, I love the Halloween movies. But she's walking around and phone's ringing, so it's kind of creepy. I don't know why the cell phone is like down the hall from her.
Yeah,
makes no sense. But I guess it's to put her into place for the, you know, even the music here sounds kind of Halloween, like
a little bit of strings. It's all
horror influences.
Yeah, there's lots going on. Lots of overhead shots in this scene. You didn't really get that much in Smallville before, but there's a scene where she's covered around by all those drip little trolleys. I've never seen so many trolleys in my life in a hospital, especially one in Smallville.
Indeed. And the abandoned wing, no less.
Oh, yes.
But it's Chloe. You think it's going to be the stalker guy, given it's Chloe. He's like, hey, what's up? And my first question is, why is my phone down the hall from me? And I guess it was important that, you know, they, like, we got to sedate her, right? Yeah. And so when she had to be knocked out, so when she woke, I would have explained to her where they're moving her, but whatever, right? So she wakes up, and it's this creep. Imagine you're in a hospital room, a normal one, and you wake up in this. But anyway, it's Chloe, and then while this is going on, paparazzi guy shows up, and there's some really cheesy effects of, like, he's taking pictures of her, right? Yeah. And I don't know. So, they start, you know, you're like, the episode wants you to believe he's the bad guy here, so they're running, she's being chased by him, she's running around, right? Security guard is a little too late to execute his plan, because clearly his plan was send in paparazzi guy. I don't know what he told paparazzi guy. He had her tailing her to make her feel unsafe, right?
Yes.
But his plan was, oh, you're going to freak out, and then I'm going to show up and shoot the paparazzi guy, save your life, and you're going to fall in love with me, right? But Clark foiled the plan, because Clark shows up and saves her. And
yes.
It's a great save.
It is a great save. And I mean, he just like comes down there and he says, what are you doing here? He says, your job. I was like, oh, there's my Clark. There's my angry boy.
It's a great one-liner from Clark.
Great
Absolutely.
One. He didn't have many sort of one-liners over the years, but that one, sort of, it was quite a scary scene, all that running and lots of strobe effects of that flash going off. And then to sort of say, I'm doing your job. Still kind of love this girl. Sort it out.
And, Mac takes paparazzi Esposito or whatever, takes him into the hallway, and then we hear a couple gunshots.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, well, there he had to execute his plan there, right?
That's it. He was cleaning up, and the only way that he could
What happened? Like, oh, he had a piece on him. I didn't see him. Like, sure he did.
Okay, Mac, you keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. You tell yourself that, Mac.
Yeah.
But we go to the Luther Mansion, and this is where Mac just lays it all out. Shoots his shot. He's like, this is my chance. I got to do it, right? He tells Lana that Lex is on a route, but, you know, the snow has slowed him down. and he takes out his earpiece, which is like, I was thinking of The Matrix when Agent Smith takes it out to talk to Morpheus. It's like, yep. That's like, I'm a security guard, but I'm going off the record here, right? That's the visual shorthand. And he's like, Lex should have never let you alone. And she's like, when do you start calling him Lex? And he's like, oh, sorry, it's been a long day. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry if I crossed the line, right? But she's like, okay, well, hey, you wanna, it's fine. It's cool. Why don't you call the kitchen? We'll get some food up here. He's like, I send all the staff home. She's like, okay, well, that's very considerate. And he's like, yeah, like you are. And they're like, oh, God. Then he goes full, like, just creeper guy, right?
Absolutely scumbag. And the way that, when he finally does say princess again and all those red strings come together, you just like get it's just a shiver down your spine thinking, Mac, I am very, very disappointed in your service.
Yeah. And she's like, but then she like starts calling him out. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm saving you. Your ex messed up my whole plan. I didn't mean to kill Brady. You know, I just, everything's going to. So the dude isn't wrong, because what he does say about this specific thing, he says, you're starting to even talk and think like Lex. And, you know, she is.
Oh, yes,
so he's
completely.
Actually not wrong about that.
Not about that, yeah. Of all of his bad qualities, you know, he's a listener.
Yeah.
he can tell when somebody needs help. But yeah, she's just getting as suspicious. She's getting just as paranoid about everybody in her life, but just not paranoid about the right people, hence the security guards that are supposed to be looking after her.
So she also says one other truth here right before you know where this is going. She's like, lonely. She's like, oh, save me. And he's like, oh, great. Well, let's get you out of here, right? But she says this, and it actually is true, just out of context. She says, I never wanted any of this. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and now I can't get out.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. Like, she really does feel that way. She's not confessing it to this guy.
No.
But it's like she's verbalizing how she really feels.
Yeah, she wants out of that relationship. She doesn't want anything to do with Lex. Or Smallville, probably, at this state of her life. It's not been the best of hometowns, really.
Move back to Paris.
Yes.
Lana. So, get
the ballet.
But then she smashes a glass on him and starts running away. And all the tropes now, like, she sees the lingerie on the bedroom. Like, I guess he wanted her to put it on. That was his plan. That's creepy.
That
plan.
Was
creepy
nasty plan. For that bit of hair. But it was, I think, one of those. That blue bottle that I always saw in Lex's room.
Lex is always drinking it,
So, the question that I've not asked before, I don't think, but I always saw that in his room. Is that an actual brand you've got in America or Canada?
You know, somebody asked Rosamond that once, and I forget the answer. Maybe that's what they had up there,
but
he's always drinking that. It's very distinct.
It looked
isn't
very
it,
posh. If it wasn't whiskey or something, it was like, oh, look, I really want some of that blue sparkling water. It was like very subliminal advertising for this blue bottle company that should have come out after the series ended.
Right.
I would have bought the lot.
I would, same here. I'm like, if I knew, I would drink that every day if I knew where to find it, right? But the phone's ripped out of the wall, right? So she can't call.
No.
And I guess she doesn't have her cell phone on her. Who knows, right? But then, you know, to your point earlier, Matt can't get through to the door. So he pulls an axe off the wall. Hey, you know what? We've seen these weapons at the Luther Mansion all around before. So it's fine. I'll allow it. But he goes full shiny.
He does.
I really wish he would have poked his head through the door.
That
would have made it
so
for me.
Close. I think they probably would have got sued then for copyright. But yeah, like about an inch away from that door was that battle axe.
Here's Mac.
That's it. He could have just got straight in. But I think we've seen some of the weapons used in there before. We've seen the sword be used. We've seen a mace get used before. But yeah, here's Mac coming through the door.
Come through the door. And so, much as in The Shining, she has to jump out the window into the snow. I'm like, come on, guys. This is The Shining. You're going all the heavy hitter horror movies here, right? this should have been a Halloween episode, right? From this, we cut back from this, you know, we cut away from the drama for a minute, and Chloe and Clark are kind of looking up Esposito's cameras and all that stuff. Chloe's like, I think she might have had an ulterior motive staying in your bedroom tonight.
Yes.
And I'm like, tonight? Wait a minute. This is all the same night?
This is
like,
it.
I kind of assumed this might have been a couple of days.
Nobody was busy that particular day in Smallville. It all kicked off at the perfect time. The perfect storm,
indeed,
as it were.
There it is, the perfect snowstorm. But they're going through these pictures that Esposito was taking Alana, and they're like, she was investigating you, right? And Clark's like, oh, it's kind of like when you were trying to figure out my secret. And I'm like, why are you guys happy about this? This is not good. But anyway, they find a picture of the Children's Foundation benefit, which Martha was at.
Wait a minute.
On this guy's camera.
She
roll.
Said that earlier on in the episode.
Yes.
There,
it's
now,
set up and payoff.
Now it all makes sense.
What a thought, right? So they realize that if he was there taking those pictures, he could not have been in Luther Mansion to take that picture of Lana. So this is the clue Clark needed to, I guess, go to the mansion and find her. And good thing he does, right? Because Mac and Lana are outside on the roof, and they're struggling, and this is where he really gets the crazy eyes, and
he's like, you were always so sweet and innocent, and that's how I'll remember you when you're gone. I'm like, oh my God.
Yep, so he just gave up everything. I'm not going to run away with you. We're not going to have a life together. I'm going to end you. And it was, intense scene, good fighting, good stunts, but suspense to the max.
And then we have a plus one from Lana Kills. Shout out to our buddy Matt Trucks, because we instituted this category with him. And there we had a long stretch where she didn't kill anybody, but she's killed another person because she pushes Mac through this skylight and they fall through to his death at the Luther Mansion floor. But Clark super speeds in. And this is a great reveal because we see the glass, we see the dead body, and we panel where we see the feet. So awesome.
It was,
right?
I thought, it was, we were going to see her just like land peacefully on a bed or a nice big mattress. But no, it was just, you saw Mac clearly dead. Yes, another one of Lana's victims. But a slow pan to the left and you just see Clark's boots and a slow reveal up. I was like, oh, that was, there was no special effects of him zooming around these snow streets, but he did clear the streets up afterwards, apparently. He did melt down.
Yeah, they mentioned that. Like, oh, he visioned the streets.
He visioned the streets. Who needs Mr. Plow? But he was there just carrying her in his arms. Another scene where he gets to carry a co-star. But it was, there was normally a scene in every episode of Smallville where you get that, reveal and that scream of delight. And for me, for this episode, it was that one where you just see his probably caterpillar boots. And it just pans up, and he's got her safe in his arms. I was like, go on, Clark. Do your thing. Good boy.
It was a great save. And like you said, you don't need the special effects. Like, you just, it's well-directed, and the reveal is A+. And she's like, how? And he's like, you're safe. That's all that matters. She's like, no, it isn't. Why are you still watching over me? And he says, maybe for the same reason you're watching me.
Yeah, I like that. That was good. I see, like, I know what you've been doing. We're both sneaky. Yeah. We both know too much about each other's lives.
Smallville has made all these people terrible, paranoid, suspicious people.
If it's not the paparazzi, it's your friends and family.
There's no escape.
There's no escape at all.
But we get some wrap up of the Daily Planet the next day, and we got a plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket, because Clark is wearing his blue shirt.
Again, another piece that I need in my collection. I've seen some that are custom made, but the actual genuine jacket's silly money. But it's lasted the towers of time because he wears it in every scene and it's never dirty.
Right. So the wrap up here, right, is with Jimmy and Clark and Chloe, and Jimmy's mad because Clark kind of left him out to dry, right? But Clark's like, sorry, I was just so concerned about Lana. And Chloe's behind Clark there, and Jimmy's like, I know how that feels. And so I guess they're cool.
Yep.
And Clark's like, all right, I'm going to leave you to make up. And Jimmy and Chloe patch up, and he's like, Clark's not so bad. She's like, yeah, he's no Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, I did like that.
And they kiss, and they're back together. And you're like, okay, you broke up for like not even an episode. Okay, but we're gonna have lots of back and forth with Jimmy and Chloe in the next few seasons, guys.
There's a lot of them. It's like a tennis match. It's left, right, left, right.
Yes. So many great relationship examples on this show, Luke. Let me tell you.
What of how not to convey a relationship?
Yeah.
How not to do things. The Smallville way.
Yeah, this is terrible. Like, this is the worst show for me to watch growing up and figuring out how to live my life. It's like, oh, I guess this is how relationships go. So they're good. They're in a good place now. But you know who's not in a good place, Luke? Lex and Lana.
They are not.
Because he's watching her wake up, and it's awkward, and it's sad that they're both playing each other.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's actually, like, as much as I, like, thought this relationship was, like, not good, it's sad to see both these characters fight. Because Lex really does love her, and she should not have gotten involved with this, and she's regretting it. And even like, she explains that, like, oh yeah, she went to the Kents because that's where no one find her. And Lex is like, okay, if you say that's why, I'm gonna believe you. But he kisses her, and she kind of like reacts poorly. I'm like, oh, this is not a good sign for
them. It's toxic relationship, but from both sides. They're both in it for the wrong reasons completely.
She's like, well, I learned from you, right? And he's like, oh, okay. You know, it's so, again, the Mac guy, he was wrong about a lot of stuff. He did a lot of bad things. But his assessment of Lana was actually correct.
Oh,
with
yeah,
how
that was
she had
spot on.
Turned more into Lex. So, but hey, guess what? The chisel is gone.
No. How?
So Lex has taken that to his secret room,
doubt. Yeah, and it's still wrapped in that wonderful red silk handkerchief that nobody would suspect anything be wrapped in.
So, last scene here, Clark and Lex at the barn, and this is my favorite scene in the episode, probably.
It's I adore any moment when we get to see Clark and Lex together, whether it be the early days or something in the future, but the two of them together, it's always emotional and powerful, and it was a fantastic way to wrap up this episode.
And they haven't got a lot of scenes together, just like his two guys talking in a long time. No. So, I mean, Lex comes back and he's like, "Yeah, looks pretty hard there." And he's like, "It's some honest work, Lex. You should try it sometime." It's like, yeah. Like yes, already confrontational, yes. Right? And he's like, "Yeah, I thought I'd just take a trip down memory lane. Remember you kidnapped my fiance and tried to kill me here?"
So, fun times.
And Clark's explanation was, "I wasn't myself." No. So we got a plus one for you're not yourself.
Yeah, low blood sugar or something. You put that down to it.
And Lex is like, I still couldn't figure out why Lana felt safe coming here, but it doesn't matter because I understand being obsessed with you back when I thought you mattered. I was like, oh, these guys just cut each other down, man.
It was low blows, but you could feel each and every punch. And that one was, you know, they were really good friends. They were fantastic pals. But then to say, oh, back then, you used to matter, not anymore.
Because even the beginning of this, like, they're back and forth. Like, the first couple lines, you're like, oh, that's something you would say back when they were friends. Like, messing, oh, you look, you're working hard. But it's like, it shows you how far it's come. Mm. So, like, oh, man, it does sting. Because you love Lex and Clark as friends. And that's the tragedy of the show is their friendship and turning into any
ship. It is, yeah. They ship. That's it. Back to that ship. There needs to be fan fiction of Clark and Lex just going out and playing football. Absolutely. Or playing catch. I want to see I want to see that. I want a baseball, like a Field of Dreams episode of what could have been between Clark and Lex.
Yeah. So Lex gives him an invitation to the wedding. He's like, "Don't act so surprised, Clark. You're important to Lana and all this."
Dude, and that was
like, "You sure you want me there, Lex?" And he's like, "Yeah, I want you there to see what you lost."
And that was just like, the lowest of blows. Just thinking, you know, the fact that what I love about Clark and Lex is this, at one point they were on the same level. Back before there was mystery and doubt and paranoia, they were just two pals. They had equal strengths and weaknesses because they didn't know about each other's different ways of dealing with drama. But Lex wants Clark's life in a way. He wants that loving home, a supportive mum and dad. He wants a normal life that he believes to be normal. So if he can't have any of that, he'll just take Lana, his true love back then, as it were.
Back then.
So, yeah. And that is, you know, one of the most brutal moves you can do in a way is, you know, go after your best friend's lover.
Mm-hmm. Not cool, bro.
No.
Violation
again,
of broken.
And that is not even that. It's just one of those things that happens in teen dramas. But even though this is a superhero show, you can still have that element between two people, superheroes or not. It's where you can relate to to those dramatic scenes.
And then Lex has the ultimate last line. He's like, "Make sure you RSVP. We need a head count." And I'm like, damn,
don't.
Lex.
What? So. Have I got to bring a date? He's thinking. But yeah, it was maniacal. And that's when the Lex that I love, not when he's keeping someone hostage or he's got somebody by gunpoint. It's the fact that he's got very sharp wit, sharper than any sword.
Indeed, indeed. And then we have the song Roadside by Rise Against. And I'm like, we were talking about how much you love the music, but I'm like, it feels kind of thrown in here because there's not enough time. Like, we need to see Clark standing there sad for like a few more seconds
there's
to make the song work.
A lot of emotional rock throughout the whole run of Smallville. Again, it could have been Lifehouse in that scene. They've been in that show so many times. I think that would have been a better use of the five for Superman, you know, the five for fighting Superman.
Five for fighting.
That would have been, But, but yeah, it was an odd musical choice, but it was a good theme final scene for the episode for me, just because the fact that we didn't get much Lex throughout it, but in the closing scene, you're waiting to find what happens with that wedding.
Hey, there's where you took my fiance after kidnapping her, right before you tried to kill me. I wasn't myself that night. I'm sorry. Sorry? What, that you didn't finish the job? You know, I'm still a bit fuzzy on the details, but with you trying to choke the life out of me, but what fascinates me is how after all that, Lana could still feel safe coming here.
That was her choice. I had nothing to do with it.
You never do. That's all right. You see, I understand the allure of trying to unravel the mystery of Clark Kent. I suffered from it once, too, when I thought you mattered.
Are we done?
Nothing left but the formalities.
Tell me what I'm supposed to do with all.
Don't look so surprised, Clark. Lana still cares about you, I know that. And I know what it would mean to her having you there.
And tell me how I'm supposed to feel. Is that really what you want, Lex?
What I want? What I want is to make Lana happy for the rest of her life. And I want you to be there on our wedding day to see what you lost. Make sure you are a SVP. We need a head count for the reception.
So know how we woke up one day, somehow thought we knew exactly what to do.
Trespass got a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5.
Wow.
So, Luke, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Trespass?
I'd give it a B minus.
Okay.
I wouldn't go down to the 1 as such. I mean, I'd like the suspense part of it, but simply because of the fact we didn't really get to see much of my boy, i.e. Superman or Clark Kent. It wasn't really a Smallville episode as much. It was a Lana episode. I've got nothing against Lana as a character. I think she's integral in the Superman history, but I wouldn't give it a 1 out of... Was it, sorry, a 1 out of 5 or a 1 out of 10?
1 out of 5 from Neil. Okay, Neil still... Bailey, he starts to to really not like the show.
Really? I couldn't tell. But yeah, I'll give it a B minus, simply right. Because of the fact there's not much Superman and there's not much music. I associate music with Smallville, so when I hear one of those tracks, I get happy, nostalgic feelings. But this one, as you said, it's one that gets sort of brushed under the rug a little bit.
It's like they had some contractual obligation to use it. Like, I just put it in here real quick at the end.
Let's give them some more face time and we'll just take it back a little bit.
Right. Yeah, you know, very close to your score. I'm going to give it a C plus.
Okay.
I think it's like slightly above average. It's extremely forgettable, hence me not remembering any of this before rewatching it. It was, you know, I liked it more us talking through it, like kind of improved it more, because I was thinking maybe around like a C or so before we had this conversation. So it did a great conversation, which raised my opinion of it.
I'm glad.
Somewhat. I think had they planned this out a little further in advance, it could have been much better instead of this just randomness of like, well, Rosemom's out of town. Let's have an episode where a security guard likes Lana. Should be one of the guys we have already on staff. No, let's hire a new guy. Like, so, I you know, that's a symptom of television at the time. I don't want to knock it for that. But the thing is, they have done things like that before much better. So they know how to do it. So that's where I land on it.
But there was some fantastic direction in the scene. There was some fantastic I felt on edge with some of those point of view shots and those, you know, there's someone around the corner, and that fact, combine that with the music, combine that with those horror homages that ran through it as well, and what brought it back for me was seeing that shot of Clark's boots as he's saving Lana,
yes,
but also that final scene between Lex and Clark was just one of those chef kiss moments between those two. Fantastic stuff.
A very necessary scene, I think, between them to kind of establish where they are, where they both think about each other at this point, because they had, you know, they had come to conflict a little bit, but like, just seemed two guys talking on the barn, just like the old days, but with the new status quo. So.
Oh yeah.
So it gets that plus is for that scene alone.
Good.
So
I'm glad. I'm glad
B
they got
minus
that one.
For you.
Yeah.
C plus for me. Let's go down the tally board. We got a big one, right? We have a plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. So that's 51. A plus one for Hospital Visit, 100, Luke.
Woo!
Again,
I'm so glad that I was here for
being
it.
Here.
I'm going to get a t-shirt made. I'm getting a t-shirt made for that one, for sure.
I was on Always on the Small, but all I got was this lousy t-shirt. And we have a plus one for Lana Kills. She kills Mac. She pushes him down that skylight. So that brings us to 5.
Wow.
We have plus one for product placement, Pete, for the Sprint phone again and again. Everybody has a Sprint phone here. Everybody uses Sprint in Smallville. I guess they have good reception in the rural community. But that brings us to 17 so far. We have a plus one for shut that laptop, because Lana shuts Chloe's laptop in frustration when she cannot get into the files. I know that's really not the spirit of it, but a laptop does shut. So that's what we're counting it. Yeah. So the letter of the law over the spirit of the law. That's what I say. So that brings us to 22 for those. And then we have a plus one for you weren't yourself, because Clark tells Lex at the end, I wasn't myself that night, which brings us to 31. And then finally, we have a new category to the tally board. We have a plus one for injection counts. Corey Moore listed them all off. It would take me all day to read them all, but I'll just tell you the episodes they're in. Kinetic, Obscura, Duplicity, Lineage, Ryan, Fever, Calling, Slumber, Asylum, Hereafter, Velocity, Resurrection twice, Crisis, Truth, Facade twice, Scare twice, Onyx, Spirit, Ageless, Forever, Aqua twice, Thirst, Splinter, Lexmas, Tomb, Cyborg twice, Hypnotic, Void four times, Mercy, Oracle, Sneeze, Reunion, Rage three times, Labyrinth twice, and finally, Trespass. First of all, shout out to Corey Moore for making that list for me. So you're the man, Corey. And wow, that brings us to 46.
Goodness me.
So there you have it. And then finally, Bechdel tests fail because they're never, every time Lana or Chloe or Martha and Lana are together, they're talking about Clark or Lex or that relationship or those relationships. So that's a fail on that front. So there you go. There's your tally board.
There we go.
Well, Luke, a lot of fun, man. Really enjoyed talking Smallville with you.
It was a wonderful way to share a Sunday.
Absolutely. If people want to find you and your podcast out there online, where can they find you?
Normally, you can find me anywhere as thegeekofsteel.com on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at thegeekofsteel. And yeah, just Google the podcast of Steel and you will find my show. And this was a very fun one to be on. I'm glad it's finally happened. And 2021 being, you know, a big anniversary. You know, it's a big Smallville. I want to get some more Smallville love going. So you've done a good job with this adventure, this project of yours. So keep up the good work. The world needs more Smallville. And you are doing it exactly that by always holding on to such a fantastic show.
Oh, thank you, Luke. Yes, I will always be holding on to Smallville for sure. So as for me, you can find me personally at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's MoronZach. You also find me over on the United Federation of Podcasts. You can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. And for the podcast here, you can find us at Always Malville with one S on Twitter. Always hold on to Smallville on Facebook. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Once again, with one S. So yes, a lot of fun, Luke. Thanks for joining me. We'll definitely have to have you back on again. And if you ever make it to the States, you know, we'll meet up in Metropolis sometime.
So. Oh, fantastic. We can record a podcast there at Missy's, which is their version of the Talon. That'd be perfect.
Oh, man, we got to do it. Put it on the bucket list. So.
Will do.
Well, we'll be back next time talking about Freak. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. So leave me at the roadside and hang me up in too dry, so leave me at the roadside and hang me up and out too dry. And I don't think you see the places inside me that I find. I don't know how we woke up one day, somehow thought we knew exactly what we're supposed to do. Always Hold on to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Gavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, Darren Kirsch, Joy Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Jason Skipper, Nathan Rochacher, Mateo Jarrell Santiago, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz,
Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sacchi, Rachel Miller, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Itzfoppen, Christopher Brewer, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clint Kent, Patricia Carrillo, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGelly, Keith Falls, and Jay Packett. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.